Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Black Op Radio. This is your host, Leno Sanic. Today we are joined by Mark Adamczyk, Andrew Eiler, and Mr. Jim DiEugenio. Welcome, everyone.
Good evening, Len.
Hey there, Len.
Hello, Len. Great to be back.
All right. Thank you very much for taking time today. There is a meeting that you guys have with JFK Information and Luna, you know, the head of the committee. And if you could give us an update, a report on what is the latest, I'm all ears.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what Andrew and Mark have specialized in. They're very much in the forefront experts on the JFK Collection Act of 1992 and the construction of the review board, which took place in 1994. And they're very well versed because they're very much studied every aspect of the act by trade, by vocation, and also because they're very interested in the Kennedy assassination. So there really aren't very many people who are as well versed in this legislation as these two guys are. And one of the things that they've decided to focus on is something that I think was relatively kind of ignored by most other people. And that's something called the final determination notices. Why is this important? Because the final determination notices, and they'll correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I know, this mandates that every document that passed through the review board should be out there. Am I right about that?
Well, at this stage, yeah, pretty much. But without seeing what the ARRB wrote in these final legal orders, it's difficult. I mean, they did postpone a lot of records to 2017, but according to Judge Thunheim, most of the assassination records were supposed to be released well before 2017. And out of the initial 450 legal orders that I got my hands on back in 2024 at NARA, a large number of those ordered records to be released in 2006, but the records stayed withheld even into 2025 for at least a small handful. So again, these are legal orders. The Assassination Records Review Board was a statutory agency created out of the JFK Records Act. They had the sole authority to collect and review the records and then make decisions whether those records would be released to the public or postponed for release. And the way the act required, if the ARRB was going to make any decision about an individual assassination record, they had to issue a written legal order saying release it to the public or no, we're going to postpone the release until this specific date. And those legal orders are what the final determination notifications are. And in total, the ARRB reviewed almost 30,000 assassination records and made postponement decisions on those records. And according to the ARRB final report, and according to Judge Thunheim, the former chair of the ARRB, they issued almost 30,000 legal orders called final determinations. So, yes, they did issue that many of them.
All right. Now, if a final determination order was written, doesn't that mean that it had a date on it?
Yes. Yeah. So, again, for each and every record that the board reviewed and issued a postponement, they had to issue a written legal order. And on that legal order, by law, they were required to either include a written date that in the future that the record was supposed to undergo periodic review, or they had to write a date in the future when it was okay for the record to be released to the public. And so that was a mandated part of each final determination order, was either a periodic review date or a release date.
All right. Now here we get into problems. Because the first category, to my knowledge, and again, you guys will correct me if I'm wrong, who's going to review it?
It was supposed to be reviewed by the agency under the standards of Section 6 of the Act. And NARA had a part in ensuring that the ARRB's final determinations were implemented. So it really was between NARA and the originating agency of the record. And Jim, like, this is another shortfall of what we've seen in the records. All of these periodic reviews were supposed to continue to update identification aids, or what we call RIF forms. So every time it came up for periodic review pursuant to what a final determination said, they were supposed to update the RIF form to show that it had been reviewed, and to give a brief explanation why it was continuing to be withheld or that it was released. But we're not seeing that a lot of periodic review activity happened after the board wrapped up its mandate in September 1998.
Well, let me reverse the question. Have you seen any periodic review?
Yeah, I think the only place that we would really see it would be on identification aid forms. And it doesn't look like that system was really updated too much to reflect any record of periodic review.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one of the major, what we call black holes of unaccountability is records that went to the National Archives after the review board concluded in September of 1998. We've seen metadata and transmissions to NARA well after that date. And the problem is, unless you have the review board's final determinations for the more than 27,000 orders that it issued, that it reviewed properly under the law, until you have those, you don't know which records were handled by the agencies at a later point looking to postpone their own assassination records in consultation with NARA, who doesn't have authority to do anything except release the record. So without an inventory of records that the review board never saw, and tying into that, the fact that all of those collections, things the review boards saw and issued a determination, and anything they did not, is not indexed and inventoried. So when, you know, like Judge Thunheim said under oath last May to Representative Luna's task force, you know, that some of the 2025 releases and redactions that were released randomly by NARA after Trump's order, the review board had never seen. So how many more are those left? And there's no way to tell without an index of the collection.
You know, that's what you just said there. I don't know how many people in this critical community are aware of that statement, but in my opinion, that was the most shocking statement that came out of that hearing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That, and now let me, and then I want to explain why I think it's shocking. All right. Thunheim was the chairman of the review board for the whole 4 years that it was around. And in fact, in reality, he's the only one left, right? Everybody else has passed on, right?
Yeah.
From the board, yeah.
Yeah, so he's the only guy who's still there. And this is the guy who says in front of the Luna Committee that some of these documents that are being released, he never saw before. Now, why is that so? Because they were supposed to have seen everything. And by the way, they thought they did. They thought that they had seen everything. All right?
Yeah, Jim, we're not just talking about a small number of documents either. We're talking about a large volume of documents were never put before the ARRB. And the really crazy thing is we can tell that they were transferred to NARA in November of 1998. So a month and a half after the ARB wrapped up all of its operations and shut down, the CIA was transferring thousands of records after the ARB wound up that they had never put in front of the ARB. And you can tell that from the metadata on the identification aids that went in with these records. And Judge Thunheim was very clear. The ARB never saw many of the documents that were transferred after the ARB wrapped up its operations. And he was incredulous when he said it.
Yeah, and you know, Andrew, I'm glad you mentioned that. And this goes to your point, Jim, about it being shocking. The other thing he said, which was damning, is that with respect to the records we're talking about, that while NARA was pretty darn cooperative when the review board was in operations, they never communicated with him after they were done. So that was, it's like, really? So now they're sending thousands of documents to the archives after, and they're not consulting the review board on the release decisions. That was crazy.
Yeah.
And virtually all of those records remained withheld until like 2021 to 2025. So under no standards under the act.
Didn't he say something like, it doesn't take Sherlock Holmes to figure out that they were waiting us out? He said something like that, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Didn't take a rocket scientist to see that the CIA was waiting out the term of the ARB.
And we, you know, having gone, Andrew and I and a few other researchers, Paul Blow joined us and his brother and, Joe, from, the great researcher on his podcast, Joe Borelli. We saw living and breathing records showing what Judge Thunheim talked about. In other words, in getting into 97 and 98, when the review board was looking at the most sensitive, Andrew tells the story pretty good. When they're looking at the most sensitive records, the ones that agencies were clinging on to the hardest, the review board was on a mad dash to review those and declassify those. And you can see memos and letters over and over from the review board to the various agencies saying, we still need this. Here's our list. You haven't given us that. And they, so by Judge Thunheim saying waiting out, that's what you could see. You could see it in the review board's files that they just were struggling up until the very end to get the most sensitive stuff.
And you know what? While we were at the National Archives in mid-May, that was really the focus of the whole team's effort. We requested, I think, over 60 boxes of records from the ARRB. And what we wanted to see was the battle that the ARRB was undertaking to get these CIA records. And what we saw starting in 1995, just a serial of correspondence between the ARRB, usually its general counsel, or its executive director, and oftentimes even Judge Thunheim, repeatedly, month after month after month, dozens of memos following up on the same records from the CIA. And we wrote to you last month regarding documents XYZ. We still haven't had a response from you. We're going to need these records. And, you know, you could see the frustration in the ARB staff as 1998 rolled in, and they still hadn't received the records that they were demanding under the law that the CIA provide them. And right up until the very last day, they continued to send memos going, we need those records. And it's quite clear that they didn't get them.
So in other words, the CIA, you're saying, I think it's pretty clear what you're saying. You're saying that the CIA was conducting a limited hangout and a deliberate one from the beginning, right?
Well, they were slow rolling the Assassination Records Review Board. And again, Judge Thunheim's under oath statement on May 1st or May 20th, clearly says that it doesn't take a rocket scientist to see that we were being waited out by the CIA. And again, the metadata that we can see at the bottom of records that were released in 2025, Jim, it shows that these records were transferred to NARA in November of 1998, a month and a half after the ARB finished, and therefore couldn't review under any of these records under the standards of the Act.
All right. Now, if that's the case, then what you're saying is that there is no way that we can have those declassified, right?
Well, those. Go ahead, Andrew. Sorry.
Yeah, like the problem, as Mark said a couple of minutes ago, is Jim, what records? There's no inventory. We don't know what records were transferred. We don't know what records weren't transferred. There's no detailed, complete inventory of what's at NARA for this third tranche of records, post-ARB records, so post-September 1998, records that were transferred. There's no way to know what's in there that we are aware of.
Yeah, only what's randomly released by NARA from 2017 through 2025, and without, you know, you can, the final determinations are the foundation. That way you can see what legally the review board declassified. And oh, by the way, those orders are still buried. But then you get into these other tranches, like Andrew said, there's no, when something is released today, you can't go and mark off a checklist saying, okay, you know, that's
out. That one.
We got that one. Yeah.
It's literally a black hole.
Yeah.
Well, this is what I'm trying to say. You said that from the metadata on this stuff that was thrown in there in November of 1998, that they were being slow rolled, as you accurately said so. So what I'm saying is then there were no FDNs attached to those, right?
No, the final determinations are only for the records that were postponed by the ARRB between 1994 and 1998. Okay? And, I mean, the fact is, it's great that the ARB did the work, but we still only have 2 or 3% of the total number of final determinations because those haven't even been released, and they were required to be publicly released by law. And no one has seen 26,500 of these. Like, there's 26,500 missing legal orders that govern the release of the records. So it's no wonder that records remained withheld for 30 years because no one saw the legal orders.
All right, let's get to that particular point now, okay, about the mystery of the FDNs. We've tried to explain why the FDNs are important and what exactly they were. The problem that Mark and Andrew have come up against is that although they have a set of witnesses, and this includes people like Marwell, David Marwell, and John Thunheim, among others, about the presence of these FDNs and the number of them. When they've gone to the archives, they can only find a very small fraction of what is supposed to be there. So this leaves the mystery of what the heck happened to him, right?
Mark, maybe you want to describe the ARB's process for, like, building their files and how the final determinations were added to those.
Sure. Well, you know, this is all credit to Andrew for drilling down on this, you know, unlike any other person's ever done, having interviewed some folks that actually created these files and these records. But what I look at them like is a little mini lawsuit file on each record that the board was asked by an agency to postpone. So when the act was created in 1992, agencies were under an obligation to get their assassination records over to NARA. They were a RIF or a record identification form with a number was created. And then if an agency sought postponement rather than an immediate release, it was obligated to go to the board for a decision. And as we all know, the board would postpone a record. Jim, you say it the best, for only a humdinger of a reason. If it was a living person or a source and method or foreign relations, something, some present harm that could be caused by release of the record, unless that was there, the board was going to release it. And if there was a reason to postpone it until 2006 or even 2017, the drop dead date, the board made that decision. But along the way, a complete file was created for each of these records. It was a little mini, like I say, lawsuit. So the agency would submit their postponement request. The board would say, nonsense. We don't see anything in this record that poses a current and present threat. We're going to release it unless you give us a legal brief. So the agency would, you know, write more back into the board. The board would then prepare a legal brief, you know, arguing why there wasn't a standard that applied under the act. And it would go back and forth until the proceedings were heard, right? And then the issue would go before the board in closed session. We're still trying to find the meeting recordings from those sessions. But they would make a decision. They would issue the final determination order with a mandated release date and for periodic review. And then it would be attached to the assassination record and placed back in the review board's file folders. And that's how you would find, Jim, you know, the final determination in the associated record. Andrew, step in if I'm not getting this perfect.
Yeah, you know, Jim, this was really the importance of all of the interviews I did with the five senior ARRB staff for our article, The War on Oliver Stone's JFK Records Act. They must have thought that I was nuts because I wanted to know about these file folders, right? I wanted to know what color were the file folders. Did they use spring clips or did they use paper clips to hold, like to fasten the documents together? What was inside these file folders? And so Mark's done a great job analogizing the fact that for every single individual assassination record, they had a mini court file because the ARRB held like a little hearing for each record to decide whether they were going to postpone or release the stuff in the record. And again, each file folder was created in a systematic way according to the ARB policies. And when the board finalized its decision and rendered it into a final determination, the staff were then tasked to print out that final determination order and then physically attach it to the file folder so it would become the cover sheet of the assassination record inside the file folder. Then all those file folders would be put inside a gray archival box, and they would be sent back over to NARA to be added to the collection. So the number one objective of our visit back in mid-May to NARA was to get a couple of samples of these ARB file folders. So we made a specific request for six original ARB file folders. We were interested in getting the file folders for the Ruben Efron records. So Ruben Efron ran the HD Lingual program that intercepted Oswald's mail. And, I mean, part of the reason why, I don't want to get lost in the details here, but part of the reason why Ruben Efron is fascinating is because Ruben Efron died in 1993, and there was no legitimate reason for withholding his name under Section 6 of the Act. And The first time anyone had heard the name Ruben Efron was in 2023. So we wanted to see what the ARRB did in terms of issuing a final determination for these six records. Did they postpone it to 2017 or did they postpone it to 2006? Because if they postpone the release of the Ruben Efron records to 2006 and they were finally released in 2023, you can tell there's non-compliance with the law in withholding it for almost 20 years after the guy died. And there's a big problem with that. But again, when we went to NARA looking for these file folders, they said they couldn't identify or find any of these ARB file folders. So I wrote to Jeremy Gunn, Judge Thunheim, and David Marwell, and Jeremy Gunn got back to us, and I think you saw his email, Jim. He said, the ARB produced all these records. They're all designated as assassination records. They were all transferred to NARA to be added to the collection, and they should all be publicly available. And that comes from the former senior legal counsel of the Assassination Records Review Board.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy Gunn, right.
Yeah.
All right. Now, if you're saying that there should be, and you actually had them describe each file folder for each record that went to an FDN, right?
Right.
Where are they?
They can't find them. NARA can't find either the final determinations, and they can't find the original ARB file folders for each record, which would 100% contain all of the final determinations.
And you have testimony that they should be there, right?
Yes.
But they're not.
Yeah, it would be like, Jim, you go into your local courthouse and you're interested in a particular lawsuit or something, and you want to see, you know, what the parties argued, what the complaint said, all the briefs that were filed, all the deposition transcripts, and you wanted to read the final judgment to see what the court ultimately ruled, and you go down and ask for this public record, and the clerk of court saying, we don't have that. Sorry about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we can't find any of the court files where there's judgments. We can't find any judgments in this courthouse.
All right, let me ask this. Could they produce any of them?
No, well, I asked for, in addition to the Ruben Efron review board's files, as Andrew mentioned, we also asked for the review board's file folder on the Lopez report, and with a specific request. They couldn't mistake it. And I wasn't asking for the Lopez report itself, but the review board's file folder. And then when I got there to NARA on the first day, the gray archival box they gave me was from the HSCA collection, and it was the original Lopez report. That was what they gave me.
We know that the review board did several examinations of the Lopez report. I think they did at least four of them. Okay, in order to get the whole thing declassified. All right, which I think they did. I think they pretty much did get the whole Lopez report declassified. So there has to be a separate file on that.
Probably the thickest one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and you're saying they couldn't find it.
No, I mean, they, like Andrew said, we asked for three straight days. We were following up. Every few hours we were there in between our scanning of thousands of other records. And, after every follow up, they would say they're asking about it. They never said they don't exist or we don't know what you're talking about. They said they weren't having any luck with our requests.
Oh my God. Okay. All right, let's get to a point that Mark brought up earlier, which I think is very important. See, the only way you can check if the ARB, if they declassified at least everything they saw, was that if you had a complete inventory of everything that was transferred to NARA and everything that NARA now has, all right? But such a thing doesn't exist, right?
Correct. All we have is the their spreadsheets, which is, you know, of course, all the RIF numbers, but it's not a an inventory. With, in other words, if there there is a transmission record of everything that came into NARA from an agency under the JFK Act, and if those transmission records receipts were inventoried and you created an actual catalog, which is what Section 4A of the Act says, it couldn't be clearer. The archivist has a duty to prepare a subject guidebook and index of the entire collection. And that's everything. Everything that was at NARA, came to NARA before the Act, that was processed during the Act, and everything that went thereafter, including all the records of the assassination records and review board, the file folders we're talking about, the final determinations. That's the JFK collection, and there's no guidebook and inventory of it.
All right. So I guess you could say, and I don't think I'm stretching it too much, I guess you could say NARA is violating the Act, aren't they?
There's been a breakdown.
There's been a breakdown. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah, I mean, you're saying it's clearly in the law, but you're saying it doesn't really exist.
Well, here's how we've been putting it to in our brief to Representative Luna, for example. We said, look, you know, whatever's happened's happened. You know, it's late in the game, but it's, you know, here's how to fix it. The archivist, under Section 12B of the Act, cannot legally certify to the President and to Congress that the entire collection, as I described a minute ago, has been made available to the public. It cannot legally certify that until it does the things we're talking about, has an inventory, the review board's orders, everything the review board didn't see, and they say, here it is. You know, even if the review board didn't see it, here's our inventory. It's all out there. Until that work is done, we're in this no man's land where the archivists can't make that final certification. So it gets back to your point, Jim, whether it's non-compliance or a breakdown, it's got to be fixed.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay. All right. It sort of sounds like when the RB passed, when they stopped functioning, all right, in which I think was in October of 1998, that nobody picked up the mantle. Would you say that's accurate?
Yeah, it was frustrating. I interviewed a fellow named Chet Rhodes, who was in charge of the whole ARRB computer system and their Lotus Note software system where they tracked all of the records and the review process. And at the end of the ARB's tenure, Chet Rhodes was responsible for kind of packaging everything up, its computer systems, its hard drives, disks, servers, and all of the electronic record of the ARB's work. And he was also in charge of getting it over to the National Archives, and he wrote a memo to the National Archives. Here's our system. Here's how you boot it up. Here's how you maintain the tracking system so that you can follow through on the ARB's orders. Because there was a calendar and notification system on this program that would identify when records needed to be periodically reviewed and released. And the ARB was very proud of the system that they developed in-house. And, you know, Chet Rhodes gave all of the computers and storage stuff to NARA, and he gave them the memo, and he also gave them his contact information and said, if you need any help getting the system up and running or answering any questions, just let me know. And I'll come on over, and I'd be glad to continue to help and assist whatever you need to do to make sure that the system continues to run. And you know what? Like Judge Thunheim, he never heard from NARA at all about the Lotus Notes system or about the tracking system that mm-hmm. NARA was, after September 30th, 1998, NARA was fully responsible. The archivist was legally responsible for complying with the ARB's orders. And no one from the ARB apparently heard from anyone from NARA.
So it sounds like NARA has become kind of like a black hole, all right, in this chain of custody of what the ARB passed on to them. There's no inventory.
Yeah.
The Lotus Notes are not there. Okay, the FDNs are mostly in limbo someplace. All right. So these are all defiances of the law, aren't they?
Yeah. Andrew, do you want to go ahead? I just thought it'd be a good point for you to mention the meeting recordings, which is kind of pertinent to what Jim just said. Everything should be there.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, I think the problem is NARA is not the most transparent agency in the world. And, you know, without a catalog, without an inventory, without an index that's functional, that's accessible, it's impossible to see anything with the level of clarity that's needed to understand what's actually in the collection and what the status of each record is. And, you know, this is why congressional oversight is so fundamentally needed right now, before it's absolutely too late. Congress really should have stepped in at least in the early 2000s to make sure that the archivist was doing their job with the periodic review process and the release orders. They should have identified what was happening with the final determinations, and that never happened. And it was just allowed to lay kind of dormant and moribund for decades. But now, like, we have this one chance now that the 2017 deadline has passed. Like, there's a statutory mandate for both the House and Senate oversight committees to conduct oversight on specifically, Jim, it's in the act. They have a mandate to have oversight over the ARB's final decisions, but no one's seen them. So, like, that's the first order of business. Let's get those final determinations for that second tranche of records that the ARB actually reviewed. Let's make sure that all of those are fully released at this point. And then let's do some oversight and see what happened to those records transferred after the ARB went out of business in September 1998. This isn't like a technically difficult set of tasks. It's basic auditing. And that's why our first recommendation in our brief to Representative Luna was to engage the General Accountability Office of Congress to conduct a full audit of the JFK records collection at NARA under the provisions of the JFK Act. to see where there's being compliance gaps and other problems with the release of records and the fact that there's no inventory or catalog.
Is this one of the things you brought up with Luna?
It was the first and probably most important issue that we raised with Representative Luna at our meeting last week.
And what did she say about it?
Mark, you want to go on that? We're really not, like, we're not disposed to really putting words into Representative Luna's mouth. We'd probably prefer to see what action is taken, but it was certainly our priority to make that GAO request for a full audit of the JFK collection. And, you know, it made an impression, I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were more than impressed with the energy and attention that she's giving this, for sure. I mean, we didn't have much time, and, you know, we wanted to, you know, explain some of the things that we've covered here tonight. And it was a great meeting. She's a very focused congressperson and obviously has a lot on her plate, but, you know, we left feeling like that we had explained these issues pretty well, and we're looking forward to seeing what happens.
Good. All right.
Yeah, just for your listeners, Len, Mark, Jeff Crudell, and I were invited to a meeting with Representative Luna on Tuesday, June the 9th, up in D.C. for Mark. And so the three of us attended. It was almost an hour long meeting with Representative Luna and a number of her staff. And as Mark says, we feel that it was an extremely productive and positive meeting. We got a lot of positive feedback for the issues, that we raised with her. And we provided her with a brief that covers a lot of what we've discussed during this show, but also 9 recommendations that we feel require action and follow up on the part of both the task force and the House Oversight Committee.
It's really a shame that she's the only one from that oversight committee. Well, wait a minute. Maybe I'm wrong. Isn't Burchett on that committee too?
Yeah, he is. Yes.
Okay. And then isn't Burlinson on it also?
Yeah. The most active members on the committee are obviously Representative Luna, Congressman Burchett, and Congressman Burlinson. Congressman Eli Crane has also had quite a bit to say about the JFK records. And you know, back in 2024, I had the opportunity to have a meeting with Congressman Burchett in his office. At the same time, I was down in Washington on my first visit to the National Archives. But Congressman Burchett has been extremely outspoken on the JFK records.
Okay. Then maybe there's some hope, okay, that you can actually push certain people into making the inventory, you know, a kind of public issue. That would be that'd be really an interesting and important development if you could do that. You know, because I think the problem is going to be, and I'm sure you're aware of this, and I'm pretty sure she's aware of it too, that they expire in November, and I don't think the Republicans are going to stay in power in November.
There's not a lot of time, Jim, and that's at the forefront of our mind. And so what we're doing is we're focusing on each of our 9 recommendations, and we're trying to put together action briefs on each of those issues, providing it to specific members of Representative Luna's staff that we've been instructed to communicate with. And then all we can do is follow up and hope that action is taken. And we're hoping to be able to work with Jeff Morley in order to get these issues into the final report. But again, I guess, look, we had a good meeting, but the proof is going to be in the pudding. What action is taken? What information is included in the final report that will hopefully lead to oversight committee action? Because the oversight committee is the overarching committee of the task force on the declassification of federal secrets. So what I see happening is that the task force is going to provide its report to the full oversight committee that has far more power than the task force. And so it's important that all of these elements that we've been discussing are in the final report and that they're reflected accurately and fully, so that the oversight committee as a whole has a chance to understand the problems that the research community and the American public have been facing with the way NARA has handled the JFK assassination records collection. Mark, do you want to add to that? Is there?
You did great. I was going to mention the final report, and as you both have stated, there's only so much time, and you know, for action to be taken over the coming months. You know, they have vacation, Congress does, and you know, the final report will be a lasting document for future action by that oversight committee, and you know, these things, audits and going to NARA and talking to folks and see what happened and, you know, where are the review boards, records, things like that will hopefully continue on with just recommendations with this limited amount of time.
Yeah, see, I think it's important to understand that Luna's subcommittee was essentially her creation. She was interested in this. And she got Comer, who is the chair of the Oversight Committee, to go ahead and sanction this subcommittee. All right? Now, Andrew was there at the first hearing with Jeff Morley, Oliver Stone, and myself. One of the most surprising things about that hearing is that it was the Republicans pushing the issue. The Democrats were trying to rain on the parade. I was shocked. I was really shocked. I'm sitting there thinking, wait a minute. Don't you guys realize that JFK was a Democratic president? He was from the Democratic Party. He was the last really good Democratic president that I think we've had. And here we have the Democratic side. And what made this even more astonishing to me was that the Democrats, there were African Americans and Hispanics on the Democratic side. I mean, no president did more for civil rights since the Civil War than John F. Kennedy did. And the night before he was assassinated in Dallas, he was at a LULAC gathering in Houston. You know, that was a legal organization pushing for the rights of Mexican Americans. But here you had this spectacle of the Republicans really pushing the issue and the Democrats not. See, that's why I say when this expires, because everybody expects the Democrats to take over Congress thanks to Trump, okay? I think it's really going to be an uphill battle after this, you know? So I'm glad
there's a very small window of time to get any action. And even So the report is supposed to come out in November. And if Congress does change hands, it's going to be the responsibility of the Oversight Committee to carry this forward. So what Mark and I are really hoping is that there is going to be follow through from Representative Luna's office to get NARA more focused on getting the ARB records that should have been released decades ago out and digitized, and to start working on a far more comprehensive inventory and directory of records. And if Representative Luna's office and the task force in the next few months can get the GAO engaged to conduct an audit, then I think that would be a major, major victory for the research community.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
One thing that I'll add, and Jim, this is in your wheelhouse, having just written a fantastic piece on the HSCA. The legislative records are a major open item, and by that I mean the sequestered collections from the HSCA and also the church committee. And you know, they, as you know, were there was agreements made with the agencies when those investigations closed down between 76 and 1979 to keep them locked away for 50 years. Part of the job is making sure that those are no longer held or sequestered under those special legislative archive rules, and that those are treated the same way as all assassination records. I spent a day and a half at NARA recently looking through the review board's files on the church committee records that were managed by the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence. And the review board was struggling mightily to get that collection organized and released by the end of 1998. And there's work to do there.
You mean they didn't finish?
No. They, a staffer, a junior legal counsel, Ron Heron, was in charge of the Senate Select Committee records, the church committee holdings, which would include the Schweiker-Hart records, which are almost impossible to find, especially if you ask Malcolm Blunt, who's been to the archives, I think, three times and come away empty-handed every time. A funny tidbit is the review board kept writing to a guy named Charles Battaglia, who was the liaison from the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence to the board, to gather all these executive session transcripts from any intelligence officer that you can name, right? They had an inventory, and the review board was following that and trying to get the collection complete. So the review board would write to Battaglia and say, we still need this, that, and the other. And then there would be a memorandum of a phone conference or something, and Battaglia would say, hold on, I have to go meet with Senator Spector about this. So Arlen Specter was the head of that Senate committee at the time the review board was trying to get those records. Yeah.
The church committee record.
Yeah.
Right? The SSCI, the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, was chaired by Arlen Specter while the ARRB was under its mandate to get all of the Senate Select Committee and Church Committee records. And so Arlen Specter was in charge of those records.
Wow. Talk about Darth Vader. Okay. I mean, yeah. Jesus, criminy. You know, and the thing is, you're saying Malcolm couldn't find the Schweiker-Hart records?
That's right. He tells a good story. When him and Bart Camp did a number of meetings they recorded on YouTube, he talks about it many times. And, you know, they're supposed to be part of the church committee holdings. I saw some sort of traces of Schweiker-Hart files when the review board was looking for everything. The review board sent a staff, like five staffers, over to the Senate offices specifically to finish the job on this. And and Malcolm is very clear that he was very interested in the Schweiker-Hart working files, And he was turned away every time. And he even asked the National Archives to take him to the Legislative Archives for another look. And they said they wouldn't be looking at that anytime soon. And the reason is just like the HSCA did, the SSCI, when the Church Committee wound up, they also had a 50-year resolution, which actually should be coming up this year, 2026, for a re-review of those records under their rules.
And you know what? You're talking about the Schweikert-Hart records?
Well, and the Church Committee holdings, which includes the Schweikert-Hart, yeah.
Because they wrapped up in 1976.
Right.
And now it's 50 years, and that Senate rule applies.
Well, okay, let me explain, because I don't think everybody listening will understand off the top of their head. See, after the Watergate Committee expired, there were some people in the Senate who thought that the CIA had a much bigger role in Watergate than had been exposed by Sam Ervin and the Senate committee. So they created this Church Committee, and the reason it's called that is because Frank Church of Idaho, a Democrat, was the chairman of that committee. So the shorthand is, it's called the Church Committee. Well, Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania and Gary Hart of Colorado joined the Church Committee. And they asked for permission to form a subcommittee, you know, like Luna's subcommittee. They wanted to form a subcommittee to specifically investigate the performance of the intelligence community in the investigation of Kennedy's death. Their report, which you can read online, is probably the most blistering, coruscating report up until that time, I think 1976, all right, that anybody wrote about the Warren Commission. And in fact, when Richard Sprague became the head of the House Select Committee, his first budget used the Schweikert-Hart Committee to justify asking for $7.5 million to reinvestigate the Kennedy case, because he said, according to Schweikert-Hart, the Warren Commission didn't do a very good job. So if you're saying those records, and let me add one last thing. One of the chief investigators for the Schweikert-Hart Committee was Gayton Fonzie. All right. And when Bob Tannenbaum, the deputy counsel for the House Select Committee, went to see Schweiker, because the House Select Committee was just beginning, Schweiker asked that Tannenbaum have his investigator, Cliff Fenton, leave the room. And so Tannenbaum asked him to leave. Then when he was gone, he reached down into his desk drawer, pulled out a file and gave it to Tannenbaum, and he said, the CIA killed President Kennedy. And Tannenbaum is sitting there in shock, okay? And he takes the file home with him, and him and Fenton are reading the file till dawn the next day. And when they're done reading it, Fenton goes, Bob, this is not some felony case in Manhattan. We're in over our heads. Okay. And Tannenbaum says, yeah, well, we're stuck with this job, Cliff. Okay. So we have to do the best we can. So if you can imagine Schweiker pulling this stuff out of his desk drawer, you can imagine the stuff that the Schweikert-Hart Committee had. All right.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, yeah, you know, Mark has really focused in on this stuff. And I gotta say, Bart Camp and Malcolm Blunt have been directly huge assets in our focus, trying to understand how the ARRB was really searching for these Schweikert-Hart files. And really it seems like they came up short. not just with the Schweiker Heart, but also with the church committee itself. And you can tell Rand Paul, I believe he chairs the Senate Oversight Committee. And he was just on the news a few weeks ago saying he can't even get copies of the records that are still being withheld on the church committee. So
Rand Paul said that?
He said that in the Senate committee. Yes.
Oh, God. Wow. Then that shows you the priority that who's ever, you know, wants to keep this stuff bottled up has for the church committee. That's really amazing. All right.
Yeah, I'll try to send you the clip from that. I was really surprised.
Yeah, go ahead and send it to me. When we put your briefing up, we'll play that clip also then.
Let's see if I can find it, if it's still on YouTube.
All right. And one last thing. The legal counsel for Schweiker was a guy named Dave Marston. Dave Marston was a very accomplished attorney, you know, in Philadelphia. And according to Schweiker, you know, Marston did some really, really great work. So you can imagine between the stuff that Marston produced out of the office and the stuff that Gayton Fonzie produced out in the field, you can imagine what's in those Schweiker Heart files, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the working files. And, you know, Malcolm puts it best, there really should be an inventory and an index of all the legislative investigation records from that period. Cause that's when, you know, they had witnesses and a real investigation, real investigators. And yeah, those are, I believe going, you know, because when we were starting to look at, you know, the review board's work, you know, we found the CIA memo from February 1992, right after the JFK film was released. And, you know, they were coming up with a plan in anticipation of all these records being looked at suddenly when they thought they were going to be locked away for 50 years, a plan to not make sure they didn't get, you know, in independent review. In other words, anticipating the review board, and they certainly were not under any circumstance going to let operational records, you know, get into that public, you know, declassification process.
So, in other words, even before the review board was constructed,
right?
They were developing a plan.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. And so I think you said before that there was both a before and after. Isn't that what you said? That they actually put stuff in there before the review board was constructed, then they put stuff in there after in order to avoid the review. Isn't that accurate?
Well, the memo suggested a number of different strategies, and I think they anticipated a little section in the act that not too many people pay attention to, but they wanted to preempt the act. Because records that were put into the National Archives before the act was passed, they weren't required to have a RIF form, so they couldn't be tracked, and they didn't need to go before the review board for review. So there was a strategic advantage that was proposed to kind of preempt the act and stick a bunch of records under their current classification into NARA before the ARB got going and before the act was passed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was specifically a CIA memo that addressed the HSCA sequestered collection. So the 64 boxes and other materials on Oswald in Mexico City was the subject of that memo. So we wrote that in our recent article. We talked about it at the Warren Oliver Stone's JFK Records Act and how that kind of set the stage for, you know, the review board's difficulties.
Mm-hmm. See, and the thing is, the things we're talking about here, you know, like Oswald's file, like the Schweiker Heart Committee, all right, like Oswald in Mexico City, these are all very sensitive areas for the agency. You know, their involvement with Oswald from the beginning. Okay. The rigging of Oswald's file from the very start. Okay. The whole thing about Mexico City.
Anything to do with David Attlee Phillips. Yeah.
Right. Right. Okay. See, these are all very important matters, and one of the things that bugs a lot of people is the whole role of David Phillips and Ann Goodpasture with Oswald in Mexico City, and I imagine when you're talking about legislative files, Dan Hardaway and Eddie Lopez, who, if you don't know, those are the two authors of the Lopez Report. Eddie gets all the credit, but they both worked on it together. The only reason it's called the Lopez Report is because Eddie had a typewriter. Okay. All right. Now, they said in public, all right, two things that I think are very, very important. All right. They said that the CIA confiscated their notes. In other words, they were allowed to make notes on everything they saw. But when they handed back the file, they had to include their notes. All right. And secondly, they drew up two bills of indictment. Okay. One for Phillips and one for Goodpasture. Have you seen those? Is there any information about those?
You know, Tim, I was going to look for some of those indictments, and I have not come across them. But if I do, I'll make sure that I send copies to you.
Oh, I'd love to put those up at K&K, because nobody's seen those.
No.
All right. So these are the things we shouldn't be looking for anymore. They should be out there by now, And let me ask you one last question. Okay. Have you thought of filing a lawsuit?
Oh, Andrew and I were just joking today how difficult our day jobs have been lately. But I mean, listen, there was a pending lawsuit. It's still pending that Mary Farrell Foundation filed, and they went into.
Are you talking about the Simpich case?
Yeah. I mean,
it's still pending.
It's essentially resolved. Andrew can answer better than me, but there's possibly some different theories that can still be brought forth, but our shift in focus is to what Andrew was talking about is oversight. It shouldn't, require another lawsuit against the National Archives to get these very basic things that we know were created, that we know should be there, accounted for. And so that's kind of what we've been looking at lately.
Okay. So you're counting on people like Burchett then, right?
Yeah. I think it's going to take a strong final report that really deals with all the problems of the collection at NARA and the fact that there's almost 30,000 legal orders that have been disappeared that should have governed the release of these records. Mm-hmm. I mean, that itself, when you think about it, like 30,000 legal orders have disappeared, and we wonder why records stayed withheld for 30 years. Like, everyone wondered why the records weren't being released when clearly the ARB released them. Well, the answer is that the legal orders governing their release were disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. It does, again, to quote Judge Thunheim, it really doesn't take a rocket scientist. And so we need swift oversight, and we need some serious action to get NARA to actually do what the act requires.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to say, Representative Luna has come out now on a few occasions, and she's spoken shockingly bluntly about her opinion on the assassination. She said, clearly there were two shooters. What else? Jim, you were there. You've heard her make really quite bold statements.
Mm-hmm. And she, by the way, she's actually made that, one of those statements, before the that conservative annual convention. And I think you can see that on YouTube, where she actually said President Kennedy was killed because of his foreign policy. You know? I mean, when's the last time you heard a representative say something like that?
She's being outspoken. And I think the one thing that, and you know, Mark was the first person to raise this, but I think it's in chokeholds. I think it's one of the main things that we end up saying in chokeholds. Congress, the U.S. government needs to repudiate the conclusions of the Warren Commission. And if Representative Luna's task force and its final report says anything,
yeah,
I think there should be a formal and official congressional repudiation of the Warren Commission's findings. For once and for all, put it on the record that no one, including the Congress of the United States, accepts the Warren Commission conclusions. And if they can repudiate those conclusions formally and officially, I, again, like getting the GAO to audit the National Archives, JFK Records Collection, getting an official repudiation of the Warren Commission would be a massive victory for the American public to finally get the government to acknowledge that that 1964 report was not worth the paper that it was written on.
Well, you know who's going to resist that, don't you? I mean, when you, I think you mentioned this in your three-part series, and I think you linked to Oliver's Substack, when that first Luna hearing made some headlines, you know, because Oliver was there, she wanted Oliver to be there, okay, because she knew that he would attract attention, okay, and so he did. You know, and he said there needs to be a new investigation. Okay. And then ABC sand trapped us.
Mm-hmm.
ABC, and you, yeah, and you got, you put this in your article and then you linked to both Oliver's memo and my memo.
Yeah.
Okay. Protesting it. So I hope that who's ever writing it, and I guess Jeff is one of the principal authors of it, you know, but I guess Luna will have final say. Yeah, I do hope that, and by the way, Burchetta's been pretty outspoken on that issue too, hasn't he? I've heard him say some things, you know, about, you know, the, you got all these bullets flying and you got all these holes.
Yeah.
You know, okay. So, so maybe there's some hope that they will repudiate the Warren.
In the strongest way that they can. You know, there's so much evidence out there now that, you know, it's clear that the Warren Commission findings are being shot down in small parts and in large parts, and it just doesn't have any legs to stand on anymore. And it's kind of shameful that anyone would still go there as the bedrock of truth, which it's clearly not. They need to repudiate it in the strongest possible terms and do it officially.
Yeah, I mean, you could just take the test, because if you just look at what's on the congressional record between what, you know, Jeff Morley testified about in terms of the Warren Commission being completely lied to by the CIA about their knowledge of Oswald, Jim, you talking about CE-399, Dr. Curtis, Doug Horn, Dan Hardway. I mean, there's enough there on the record to do what you're talking about. And I mean, Representative Luna has been very public that, you know, she believes there was more to it. So.
Okay. I think what we'll do is, when we post your brief and we get the thing from Rand Paul, we'll encourage our readers to go ahead and write Burchett and Burleson, okay, and try and get them, you know, to write a really strong report come this November. I don't think they're going to need very much encouragement. I think they're pretty much on our side as it is.
Mm-hmm. No, that would be fantastic.
Yeah. Okay, Len, do you have anything you want to ask?
No, when I just hear of all the obstacles, it's pretty depressing that in every effort of the government and above the government has been made to obfuscate this, hide the things, pretend they're not even there, and then there's no index of anything, and it's just on and on.
I agree, but I give these two guys, I give Mark and Andrew, you know, all the credit that they deserve for working at this thing and getting the results that they have been getting. Okay, so I think that they've made a really significant achievement in this regard in A, bring public attention to these missing FDNs, and B, how Congress has ignored this. All right, and see how we have to push because of the November window, all right, in order to get a really strong report this November. Okay, so let's, everybody who's listening, let's try and encourage that result. And I congratulate these two men, okay, for what they've achieved so far. I think they deserve a pat on the back for that.
Yeah, a really good effort. The overall picture, I just can't believe that, you know, still that they're fighting this. So you hope by November...
Len, doesn't that tell you something?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, like Allard Lowenstein said, the Yale lawyer, in my experience as an attorney, people with nothing to hide don't hide things. Well, here we are in 2026, and they're still hiding things. What do they expect the public to believe, you know?
Well, obviously, I guess they don't really care what the public believes. It's just been up to interested citizens to dig up facts and solve the case for themselves, which is what you guys are doing, you know, and bring forward evidence.
Len, don't forget, we have Luna. Okay? I think she's on our side. She's one of the best things that's happened to us in a long time. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and let's just hope there's a little momentum with that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. Thank you so much for a superb job, you guys.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Len. Always happy to do it, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, thank you, guys. And if any of your listeners want to check in on any updates, we've got a pretty active Twitter account at JFK Chokeholds on X, and we regularly update that feed with new information and hopefully we'll be posting a copy of our brief up there once it's up on Kennedy's and King.
Yeah, it'll be up there, believe me.
Yeah, okay. All right, great. And we'll make a link to all that.
Okay. Thanks so much. Have a good night, you guys.
Thanks,
thank you so much, Jim. Thank you, Len.
Okay.